Hello, and welcome to The Big Snore. In each episode, I will read a passage from a book, an article, a magazine that runs about 15 to 20 minutes. You can choose to listen to this as a bedtime story or just a story at any time of the day. Today, the passage I'm reading is from Jeanette McCurdy's biography, I'm Glad My Mom Died. I know it sounds really dark, but she treats a really difficult series of topics with a lot of candor and humor. Make sure you smile a lot with teeth. When you do your non-teeth smile, it looks kind of forlorn, Mom tells me as she changes lanes on the 405. We're on our way to a lunch meeting with the creator. I'm nervous because Mom says a lot is at stake. She thinks this could be an I'm thinking of giving you a spin-off lunch date, since it's very common for him to write spin-off shows for characters of his current shows. I've thought about telling Mom I think we might be disappointed if we put that expectation on it, but I haven't said a word. She does well when she has something in my life to look forward to. And don't forget to act really interested in whatever he says, really engaged, Mom tells me. Try and make your eyes a little wider if you can. It'll help him pop. I nod along. One of us should bring up my cancer too, to really get him on our side. I can take that if you'd like. Sure. Great, 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 Mom says excitedly. We get to lunch right on time. The creator's already there, sunglasses on, even though he's indoors. He lifts them up when he sees us. He stands up from the booth, hugs Mom first, then hugs me into a tight squeeze, picking me up off the ground. McCurdy curds, he says, finally setting me down as he repositions his sunglasses. My favorite little actress, Mom beams. You know, I work with a lot of young actresses. A lot of them are pretty, some of them are funny, but none of them are as talented as you. Mom's face looks like it's gonna rip if she smiles any bigger. I smile too, with my teeth, Mom specified. Thank you, I mean it, the creator continues on, spooning some of the tuna tartare he already ordered onto his appetizer plate. You act circles around them, you could win an Oscar someday. Thank you. This is how conversations with the creator usually start. He'll heap the compliments on while undercutting other talent that he works with. I appreciate the compliments. The creator's approval means a lot to me. He's the reason I'm a series regular on a television show. He's the reason my family and I don't have to worry about money anymore. But at the same time, I wonder if he's trying to pit me and his other talent against one another. I wonder if he says the same sorts of things to each of his talents so that we each stay in line and think we're in his good favor. I wonder this because now that we've worked on an entire season of television together, I've had plenty of time to get familiar with the creator's ways, to understand him. I feel like the creator has two distinct sides. One is generous and over-the-top complimentary. He can make anyone feel like the most important person in the world. I've seen him do this when he made the entire crew give our production designer a 5-minute standing ovation for the jail set he built in 2 days. Or when he gave a speech thanking our stunt coordinator. The coordinator cried with gratitude. The creator knows how to make someone feel important. The other side is mean-spirited, controlling, and terrifying. The creator can tear you down and humiliate you. I've seen him do this when he fired a 6-year-old on the spot for messing up a few lines on a rehearsal day. And when a boom operator accidentally dropped the boom into a shot and the creator stomped over to him and screamed in his face that he was responsible for ruining a magical take, and he hoped that he would regret it for the rest of his life. I've seen the creator make grown men and women cry with his insults and degradation. He'll call people idiots, buffoons, stupid, dumb, sloppy, careless, retarded, spineless. The creator knows how to make someone feel worthless. That's why I've learned with time that as much as I want the compliments to mean something to me, I can't let them because tomorrow he might be screaming insults in my face that will hurt me just as much as the compliments raise me up. I feel that I always need to be on guard around him, catering to him emotionally. I feel similarly around the creator as I feel around Mom, on edge, desperate to please, terrified of stepping out of line. Put both of them together in the same room and I'm overwhelmed. The creator orders main courses for us to share. Something with lobster, a pasta with meat, and a flatbread. I know Mom won't approve of me eating any of these foods, but I know the creator will be offended if I don't eat them, and he will comment on me not trusting him or thinking he has bad taste. So I pick at the food as convincingly as I can, hoping the creator will believe I'm eating and Mom will know I'm not. So the reason I invited you both to lunch, the creator starts. He takes a long sip of his old-fashioned while Mom watches him, eager for him to finish the sentence in the way she wants it to be finished. Well, first, the creator says, almost as if he's intentionally dragging out the tension as long as he possibly can. Let me ask you a question. How do you like being recognized, being famous? She loves it, Mom answers for me. Absolutely loves it. And the fans adore her too. They almost always say she's their favorite character. I poke at my pasta. All right, good, the creator says, because you're going to have a lot more of it. Mom's breath gets rapid with anticipation. I want to give Jeanette her own show. Mom accidentally drops her fork with excitement. It clinks against the plate. I even have the name picked out. Just Puckett. Isn't that a fun name for your own show? The creator asks with a smirk. Yes, yes it is. It's a very fun name, Mom chimes in. It can't happen for a while because iCarly's doing too well, the creator says, trying to temper Mom's excitement. She nods along. We'll have to wait a couple years, the creator reiterates. But if you keep doing what you're doing and listen to me, take my advice and let me guide you, I promise you I'll give you your own show. Oh, thank you, Mom says, tears welling in her eyes. My baby deserves it. My baby deserves it. Mom looks over at me and nods, urging me to smile with teeth. So I do, even though I'm concerned. The creator was very clear that his offer had a contingent, me listening to him, taking his advice, and letting him guide me. And even though a part of me appreciates the creator, a part of me is scared of him. And the idea that I'll have to do everything he wants is intimidating to me. Why don't you seem happier? You're getting your own show, Mom says on our drive home. I am happy, I lie. Very happy. Good, Mom says as she glances at me in the rearview mirror. Because you should be. Everyone wants what you have. I've been on iCarly for almost 3 years now, and in some ways things are easier. My friendship with Miranda has been a source of camaraderie and emotional support. I'm friends with the rest of the cast too, but my connection with Miranda is different and special. We Skype on the weekends and see movies at ArcLight after work. I now go there twice a week without batting an eye. Mom always joins. She'll lean over to me midway through the movie, her head bowing in resignation. Their sound is very surrounded. More important than my friendship with Miranda, Mom's not as stressed about the two things she's typically most stressed about, bills and my body. Even though the consistency of my paychecks has helped bring Mom some financial comfort and stability, she makes her opinion of the size of those paychecks well known. They should be ashamed of the salary they give you. Compared to network TV, it's jelly beans. Jelly beans, she tells me every day in my dressing room while she changes my clothes for me. And no residuals either with Nickelodeon, or should I say Nickel and Dimelodeon. Despite her complaints, I know deep down she's grateful, because this is a big step up from where we were before. The house payments are made on time and in full, and she no longer has to call bill collectors and beg for extensions. She still monitors my lunches, but sometimes she lets me eat the food on set. My dinners are still mostly iceberg lettuce with dressing spray and ripped up pieces of low-calorie bologna, but she'll give me two Smart Ones cookies for dessert, and my breakfasts have totally transformed. She makes me breakfast, which I never imagined would happen. She'll pour 2% milk on top of honeycomb cereal. 2%, not non-fat. And sure, honeycomb cereal is still one of the lowest calorie breakfast cereals per gram, as Mom says. It's 160 calories for 1 3/4 cups. But this is crazy. I've never seen her support eating like this. A part of me wonders if Mom is supporting my meals a bit more because Miranda and Nathan eat breakfast and lunch in our joint schoolroom, and it might look weird if I don't, or if I eat much less than them or something, but I don't ask her. I just let it happen. My body is shifting a bit. My nipple buds have become very tiny breasts, and it's getting harder to hide them with my undershirt pulled through underwear legs technique. My skin is breaking out a bit too, which is new and weird and embarrassing. This past year, I've started wearing makeup on set, and even on my off days. I used to hate makeup, but now I want to wear it, to hide behind it. I recently started shaving my legs too. Well, Mom does it for me, because she still showers me even though I'm 16. I didn't even know shaving legs was a thing until I heard a co-star's mom making fun of my hairy legs to my co-star. And then she laughed in a way that has haunted me every time I've shaved my legs since. So now, even though Mom isn't as stressed about bills or my body, my legs are smooth and my nipples are past bud stage and my skin is red and bumpy in places, and all of this feels awkward to me, the show has progressively grown in popularity. Susan keeps throwing around terms like cultural phenomenon and global sensation. The more the show's exploded, the more my fame has too. I've been on countless red carpets for fancy events and award shows and movie premieres. I've done talk shows like Good Morning America and The Today Show and Craig Ferguson and Bonnie Hunt's new one. I can't go places anymore without being recognized. I no longer go to Disneyland, my favorite place, because last time I tried, I was walking down Main Street and so many people came up to me that they had to stop the Christmas Fantasy Parade midway through. Goofy looked pissed. The kind of fame I have now is causing me a level of stress that I did not know was possible. I know everybody wants it and everybody tells me how lucky I am to have it, but I hate it. I feel constantly on edge whenever I leave the house to go anywhere. I'm worried that strangers will come up to me and I get very anxious when interacting with strangers. They'll shout things at me like, "Sam, where's your fried chicken?" or "Can you hit me with your butter sock?" A butter sock is a prop my character frequently uses, and it's exactly what it sounds like, a sock filled with butter. My character carries it around to beat people up with. Whenever someone shouts at me about chicken or socks, I'll laugh like it's a good one, even though it's not a good one. I've heard this good one thousands of times, and it was a bad one from the get-go. But it only morphs into a worse one with each time I hear it. I'm shocked by how many people think they're original and say the same thing. I'm so unimpressed by people, even irritated by them, at times even disgusted by them. I don't know exactly when this happened, but I know it's a relatively recent switch, and I know fame had something to do with it. I'm tired of people approaching me like they own me, like I owe them something. I didn't choose this life. Mom did. My anxiety causes me to be a people pleaser. My anxiety causes me to take the picture and sign my autograph and say it's a good one. But underneath that anxiety is a deep, unearthed combination of feelings that I fear to face. I fear that I'm bitter. I'm too young to be bitter, especially as a result of a life that people supposedly envy. And I fear that I resent my mother, the person I've lived for, my idol, my role model, my one true love. This complicated feeling crops up when I take a picture with a stranger and I see Mom standing off to the side, mirroring the smile she wants me to have. It happens when she tells the person taking the picture to get one more or two more just in case, when she knows how much I dislike this whole thing. It happens when she has me practice my autographs and tells me it's getting a little sloppy. Little C, big C, URDY. They need to be able to read every letter. It happens when she pitches me on what slogan to write to accompany my autographs. "See ya at the movies" is their current winner, and Lord knows why. I'm not even in movies. I'm on TV, and kids' TV at that, which, if anything, almost guarantees the fact that I will never be in any movies. The transition from child stardom to a legitimate career as an adult in the entertainment industry is a notoriously tough one. Even for young actors, blessed with roles in credible films with credible directors. But for kids who start out on kids' TV, it's a career death sentence. There's something about the one-dimensional, overly glossy image combined with the extent of the public recognition of that image that makes it nearly impossible to overcome. The second the child star tries to outgrow and break free from their image, they become bait for the media. Highly publicized as rebellious, troubled, and tortured, when all they're trying to do is grow. Growing is wobbly and full of mistakes, especially as a teenager. Mistakes that you certainly don't want to make in the public eye, let alone be known for the rest of your life. But that's what happens when you're a child star. Child stardom is a trap, a dead end, and I can see that even if Mommy can't. Fame has put a wedge between Mom and me that I didn't think was possible. She wanted this, and I wanted her to have it. I wanted her to be happy. But now that I have it, I realize that she's happy and I'm not. Her happiness came at the cost of mine. I feel robbed and exploited. Sometimes I look at her and I just hate her. And then I hate myself for feeling that. I tell myself I'm ungrateful. I'm worthless without her. She's everything to me. Then I swallow the feeling I wish I hadn't tell her. And tell her, "I love you so much, Nani Mommy." And I move on, pretending that it never happened. I've pretended for my job for so long and for my mom for so long, and now I'm starting to think I'm pretending for myself too. That was a passage from Jeanette McCurdy's biography, I'm Glad My Mom Died. You've been listening to The Big Snore. Until next time.